Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky, but Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Shop up to 50% off site-wide, plus door busters and a free professional measure during the Black Friday sneak peek sale at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Loud and Local continues on The Rock with Kevin Deers, 99.9 KISW.
Hey, what's going on, Loud and Local? Right now, I'm talking with Cynthia Brothers, someone you might not recognize their name, but you probably recognize if you follow anyone locally on Instagram. You've probably seen Vanishing Seattle, a very popular social media account here on Instagram, and it documents the changing ways of Seattle, the Northwest, and all things, you know, within this area, the Pacific Northwest. So, first off, welcome to the show, Cynthia.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Full disclosure, we were talking and deep into this conversation. I'm glad it wasn't too deep. I'm glad we were about 10 minutes into this conversation, and then I realized I looked down at my recorder. It was not recording. So let me check real quick. And yes, we are recording. So I follow Cynthia through the Vanishing Seattle account. But, you know, so in our 5 minutes ago conversation, you mentioned that you grew up in Seattle. So what was your elementary school?
I went to a few different ones. I went to BF Day, and I think it was in Fremont at that time. And then I went to Olympic View for a year, kind of by Northgate. And then I went to Coleman, which is now, it was in two different buildings, and now it's known as Thurgood Marshall. So I kind of got to get a little lay of the land, yeah, as it were. Yeah.
So your parents, they moved here to Seattle, or had they kind of grown up in Seattle as well?
They both moved to Seattle from other states or other countries, and then met in Seattle. My dad was working at a print shop in the U District, and I think my mom also started working there. So they met. Yeah, they met in Seattle, and then got married.
Nice. When did you first start getting into, like, going to shows and music and then playing in bands? What age?
Yeah. Well, my, do you want me to talk about my earliest music memory, or should we revisit that?
Let's talk about that. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
It has to do with Bumbershoot, yeah, as I recall.
Yes. Yeah, as we spoke of 5 minutes ago. Yeah, so my earliest music memory was my parents taking me to see Miles Davis,
yeah,
at the Coliseum for Bumbershoot.
Yes.
I think I was probably about 5 or 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And I just remember it was, like, super loud. His trumpet, yep, was real, real loud. And I have this kind of fuzzy memory of watching him on the stage, yeah, playing his trumpet in the spotlight. So that was pretty cool. And then another favorite early memory is during the Sonics 92-93 playoff season and being crammed into, I don't even know if it was called Key Arena back then, but going there with all the school kids from across like Seattle Public School District and Sir Mix-a-Lot coming out because he had released this single called Not in Our House. No, Not in Our House. And it featured Gary Payton and some other players. And yeah, that was real fun. And I still have that cassette tape at my parents' house. So
nice.
Treasured memory. But yeah, I also have memories of like being going to Deviate.
Yes.
And like having my parents or my friend's parents like drop us off at that McDonald's on Fifth Avenue North.
I went and saw I had, you know, girls from my high school that, you know, I was too young to drive. They drove me up to go see Dropkick Murphys at the Deviate. And, you know, I thought it was so cool.
Yeah.
And, but they, when I showed up to school that day wearing a Dropkick Murphy shirt, they said, you can't wear that to the show. You can't wear your Dropkick Murphy shirt. We're not going to drive you to the show if you wear this Dropkick Murphy shirt to the Dropkick Murphy show.
So not cool.
So they made me change my shirt. Yeah. You know? But yeah, so you went to these shows. What was your first live music experience? Oh, aside from the Miles Davis, like on your own. When did you go to like your own show on your own time?
I mean, I probably was in. I mean, it definitely would be at an all ages venue.
Yeah.
I'm thinking probably like. Early high school, it could have been, or maybe even middle school at Deviate, like going to a dance night or something, which I probably was honestly like a little too young to go to.
Yeah.
Paradox was another place that I went to. Also, I'd say up into college, actually, I saw a lot of good shows there.
That was the kind of venue where you could just go any night of the week, and I would see so many all ages hardcore shows there. And that was the kind of stuff I was into at that time, was all ages punk and hardcore, but you could go any night of the week. See some friends and you see any kind of band. And it was really interesting that was connected to the Mars Hill Church, isn't it?
I had no idea until actually, I didn't know that until kind of recently when I was like researching it because they're pretty like low key about it. But they also had a pretty good, I mean, I mostly was seeing kind of, I don't know, like indie or rock or punk shows there, but I also saw hip hop shows, like the Brainstorm MC Battle was there. Like they had a pretty good, diversity of music, which I really appreciated. Velvet Elvis, some good shows at Velvet Elvis.
I never got to go to Velvet Elvis, but.
I mean, it seemed like it was like a little more short lived. And also, you know, I have to come up with some excuse about why I was going to like Pioneer Square.
These were all names of venues. That was a name of a venue that I used to see when I would look through the Rocket. I would see the Velvet Elvis, the Sit and Spin, which was, you know, you could go get your laundry done and also watch your show at the Sit and Spin.
Yeah, love Sit and Spin. Rock Candy was another one.
Did you ever see Peter Parker?
I think I did probably at Paradox.
Okay. I'm just asking because Steve Miggs is the host of BJ and Miggs on KISW was the drummer of...
No way.
Yeah, he was also Steve the producer on the Andy Savage show back on the day on 107.7 The End.
Very cool. Yeah. And speaking of the Rocket, there's also a great Instagram account called, I think it's Rocket 90s.
I follow him as
well. I love seeing those old ads. It just like instantly transports you back.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've seen ads for like, buy your KISW t-shirt at the Squire Shop is what they called
The Squire Shop.
The Squire Shop. Yeah. You played in some bands.
Yeah.
Let's shout out your bands.
Okay.
Can we play one of your bands at the end of the show?
Oh, man. I don't...
Will you supply
it.
Us with an MP3?
Maybe.
Maybe? Oh, yeah. Okay. Your best song? Your hit single?
Yeah. I'll check in with my bandmates, my ex-bandmates. And we'll put our heads together and come up with something.
Reunion, maybe?
Yeah, well, actually, so the first band I was in, Man Plus, they have gotten back together. I'm not a part of it because I just haven't, been able to get my shit together. But I think they just played at Funhouse last week, and I think they're going to do more shows.
So, okay.
Yeah, so I'm, like, stoked to go see them. And it was one of those things where I think the band was around for a few years, so we had, like... I don't know, probably like 10 different people come through. And then,
the rotating cast of Man Plus.
Exactly. Yeah.
Was it kind of indie rock or punk?
I'd say so.
Yeah.
With some electronic, electro punk stuff. I kind of struggled to to put my finger on it. But that was in the early 2000s. And then I was in New York for about roughly 2006 to 2011, came back, and then with some of the same members, we formed a group called Naughty. I'd say that was kind of more like electropunk. And then with some of those members, we did an offshoot that was more of a rock band called Danny the Street. yeah, so that was a lot of fun. I didn't like really, I wouldn't like necessarily call myself a quote unquote musician.
Sure.
I was just like, I'm going to press these buttons, yeah, and I'm going to play my trumpet, and I'm going to like pretend I know how to
trumpet
play bass. And
wow.
Yeah.
So you're never in a ska band?
No.
Okay. Well, too cool for ska band.
I don't know about too cool. I don't know if too cool is the right way to describe it. But yeah, we had a lot of fun. And I just feel super lucky that That's we awesome. Got to play some, yeah, just like fun venues around town. Chop Suey, Numo's, Central.
The old Funhouse.
Yeah, the original Funhouse. I don't remember a whole lot about that show because I remember it had a lot of Jello shots and like
that was a cool place. Bloody Marys, yeah. And, shout out to Brian Foss.
Yeah, awesome place. And I remember it was also always very loud there, which
yeah,
which was cool.
That place rocked, and there was, believe it or not, a Russian Jewish dance club that was nearby that I saw a punk show at. It was very underground, but yeah, I saw some bands there.
You remember the name of it?
I don't. We just stumbled in there.
Research. Maybe yeah. We could find something. We had to do some digging online. Yeah.
So you're talking about digging online. So great transition. Vanishing Seattle is you're a influencer on Instagram. So, you know, that's a very cringe word. Yeah. And you think of like people like, you know, doing like, you know, fashion TikToks and stuff and about like face creams and stuff. But, you know, you document the changing city around us in the Northwest. And first off, are you like a journalist by trade?
No, I mean, I've done some writing and I've like done some articles for various, yeah, publications, but no, not by like training or trade.
What's your day job, if you don't mind me asking? Like what?
Yeah, I work for an immigrant justice fund as a program officer, not a probation officer, yeah. Which is usually what people think I said.
Sure.
But basically doing grant making, technical assistance to increase the capacity of the immigrant justice movement. So I think there are some intersections with that actually, and it helps to kind of inform the way I approach the Vanishing Seattle work.
Absolutely. So in our previous interview 5 minutes ago, you mentioned that it started in 2016, Vanishing Seattle. Mm-hmm. What was kind of the impetus to start the account?
Yeah. Well, I think around that time, I mean, I had moved back from New York and just kind of noticed that the city seemed to be undergoing like this pretty rapid rate of change, and like a lot of places and landmarks and small businesses, mm-hmm. you know, were just kind of getting priced out or disappearing at what seemed like a more accelerated rate. So, I mean, the stuff had kind of been swirling around in my head. And I think the thing that kind of pushed me to actually just start the Vanishing Seattle account and start posting stuff was a place called, it was a Filipino restaurant on North Beacon Hill called Inai's. Mm-hmm. One of my friends, Atasha Manila, worked there as a server and was also a drag performer. And every Friday would do this incredible, like, 3-hour, like, one-woman show, and started attracting a really big following. And it was always, like, a really, like, welcoming community hub. And so because of, like, the rising rates and of rent and gentrification, basically, they couldn't afford to stay there. And so, you know, I, as an Uncle Ernie, the owner, decided to close. So I went there for their very last night open, which was also a night that Atasha did her show. And so you just had this this room that was packed with this cross-section of the Beacon Hill community, Asian American community, queer community. And she did this amazing performance of Effie's song from Dreamgirls, and I'm telling you, I'm not going.
Yeah.
And so I was just taking video and pictures, and that ended up being my very first post. Was a video from that night. And for me, it was just kind of like, I wanted to capture the spirit and the magic of that moment and that space and the people in it. And a thing that to me felt very uniquely, but also quintessentially Seattle, and to show that this is the kind of magic that we lose when we lose places like this. So yeah, that was my very first post. And then I just kept posting stuff after that, places that I noticed were vanishing, just, you know, walking around the city, or, you know, stuff that people would send me about what was happening in their neighborhood. So it just kind of picked up its own momentum and has grown from there.
Yeah. I get such a nostalgia trip sometimes when I look on your page because of things like Chubby and Tubby's. you know, things that, you know, I have this memory of, but it just, it, I, you know, it jogs these vivid memories, you know, these childhood memories. And it's so cool to have this. From there, you obviously have done a shitload of work. Do you, you know, what are the resources you have to do these research? And cause it's not all, you do a lot of, you know, historical posts and stuff like pictures from the past and whatnot. You know, how much of your time does this take up?
Yeah.
and what resources do you go to the library for that? Is it all online kind of, or just mix and match?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it is a lot of labor. I'd say just like the time and the research and the writing and the editing. It's also kind of the emotional labor because like I do feel, some of the stuff I take really personally, especially the places that I do have a connection or a tie to. So yeah, I mean, it could take, like one post could take me a few hours depending on like how deep I want to go into it. I mean, but luckily, I mean, there are a lot of good resources. There's what people will send me. I mean, I think at this point I consider Vanishing Seattle to be this kind of collective storytelling project. And I think that really makes it stronger. So it's, I don't think it should be just me and what I'm aware of and what I can find and like my experience or perspective. I mean, I think it should be as many people who want to participate in it as possible. And so people do send me information and stories, pictures. So that's like a huge source of where I get my information and my content. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff online. So I'll kind of see what might already be written about it, what pictures I can find online. There's some, you know, great local historians and sources like HistoryLink, Mohai has great art or pictures. And then just like also talking to people, like talking to small businesses and just kind of getting, I guess, primary information.
Yeah.
So my struggle is always like, I want to cram, like I want to put everything in there because everything is important. But when you, you know, mostly I'm posting from Instagram that has caption limits and a certain number of pictures you can put in there. So that's kind of always my struggle, is making it fit into the medium of, or the, I guess the Instagram platform, because I just feel like there's so much more depth that you can get out of each of these places and stories.
What, who have been some people that you've met along the way? Like, because you, you know, you meet these people at these small businesses that might be moving, or, you know, are there some key, you know, folks that you like to shout out, like some stories that, you know, really, when I ask this question, that like really stick out to you, is like, I know you made a film or like a documentary. So would that be one of them?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So a couple years ago, or I think it was completed like right before the pandemic. I teamed up with my co-executive producer, Martin Tran, and we did a docuseries of six short films that were focused on Seattle neighborhoods, but small businesses or important places within those. So like U District, Hardwick's Hardware, Central District, Wanawari, Capitol Hill, arts and culture and queer history there, International District, the Four Seas, and Busch Garden. And not all of them are stories of vanishing or like a eulogy, like Hardwick's, like yes, they had to close and move and they're no longer around. But Wanawari, for example, is like against the backdrop of displacement. They're resisting that through art and creativity and holding space. So one that is like very close to my heart was the Busch Garden film, and I kind of grew up going there as a kid, like going to eat there with my parents. And then when I turned 21, I kind of like transitioned over to the bar area and karaoke. And, you know, that's a place where I also was mentored by older activists and leaders and really found a sense of community. And the owner of Busch Garden, Karen Cicada, who we call, she's known as Auntie Karen in the community. I mean, yeah, I would say, I think the Busch Garden film has probably gotten the most resonance with viewers And also, I mean, Auntie Karen's story and her role as just being a steward of the space. Like, she started working there in high school.
Yeah.
And became the owner and then has been engaged in this, just battle against, with, along with community, been in this campaign to save Busch Garden because developers bought it and want to tear it down and put a 17-story, like, luxury apartment building there.
Oh, how great.
So, yeah, I mean, it's people like that who it's like they just invest all of their life and energy, and it's not just about, like, running a business in a transactional way. It's really about nurturing a sense of belonging and place and
building
and
a people. Community.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's You're like, a product of that community.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. So. Yeah. And I'm very grateful for it. I think that's why I just get so, why I do devote so much time and energy, because I think it's like, isn't that the whole point of living in a city is having
culture,
places where people can feel at home and connect with each other.
Yeah. You know, you've documented this city for 6 years now. You've met a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Is the soul of Seattle still alive?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, very much so. I think that the desire and the energy and the spirit to have Seattle still be a place that welcomes misfits and outsiders and weirdos and kind of embraces different cultures and subcultures, mm-hmm. and that's kind of the strength and the lifeblood and the vibrancy.
Yeah.
I think there's still a lot of people that, whether were born here or have just been here for a few years or just got here, it's like they are looking to create something mm-hmm. that's not, again, just about being transactional or maximizing profit or return on investment. Like, they're about supporting culture and community and people. Mm-hmm. So I think, as long as the conditions are here that allow people and businesses and organizations to continue to do that, then I think, we're in good shape. But I do worry about, will Seattle be a place where that type of thing is possible? Or are you going to have a whole lot of capital? Are the barriers to creating something dope going to be so high that you have to be backed by a bunch of investors or
work
be a
five
person?
Jobs.
Work five jobs, get killed by capitalism, just to do something cool. And I think a lot of people have had to leave because that's the environment we're in. But I really give it up to people who are just like, yeah, I think Seattle has always been a place historically that's been kind of anti-establishment and countercultural, and I hope we can keep that spirit going and be like, keep envisioning that there's something, a better world is possible, mm-hmm. And then we have the power to come together and create that reality.
Yeah. The Seattle to Tacoma pipeline is real. I was talking to Carrie Ockery from Hammerbox and from Goodness, a few months back over the summer for Loud and Local. And, we were talking about Seattle in the 90s and her moving here and starting Hammerbox. And, she was just saying how you could work a part-time job and be in a band and you could do fine. And she moved to Tacoma and owns a house down in Tacoma with her partner. And she was just saying she gives it up to any musician in Seattle right now who's making it happen because she doesn't know how they can, with having to work three jobs and then also be a musician or whatever it may be, but, do you think that that's going to be a major effect in Seattle? Is people, is that something you've noticed? Is people moving down to Tacoma, down to the South End a lot more? I've had a handful of friends in the last few months do it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think there's just has been an exodus, South, North, out of state altogether.
Yeah.
And also kind of an exodus even from creative, endeavors, people who feel like, oh, this isn't, I can't really pay my bills, so I guess I'll go be a coder now or, and it's like, yeah, but I mean, people gotta eat. Just what's gonna, have them help them make ends meet. And you can't blame people for that. But I feel like we are poorer as a city for every like kind of good person we lose or that moves away. And, you know, you hear all this talk about Seattle being innovative and a world-class city. And I think to be a world-class city, you need artists and teachers and social workers and organizers and nurses. Like, you actually need to have a very diverse population in order for it to be healthy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just think that's kind of an indicator that, you know, something ain't quite right when we have like, yeah, a lot of our neighbors having to move or not being able to make ends meet, or like all the, you know, cool people that could come here and do awesome stuff here that can't even come in the first place because it's prohibitively expensive.
Yeah.
Not to be a total bum out.
No, it's totally true. I mean, you know, like, I feel like, I will say that there are some positive stories on your feed. There's a lot of hashtag not vanishing stories, you know, where you talk about, you focus on, you know, an institution, a local business or something that's thriving or is coming back or is relocating, but like doing well.
Unvanished.
Yeah. Exactly.
Those are fun.
Yes. And then, but you know, a lot of times when you pop up on my feed, it's not always the most positive thing. It's sometimes, you know, real bummer. What have been some of the biggest posts, like most heartfelt and places that got the most feedback and stuff? What have been a few of the top like things that you posted about where people have the most fun stories or just like heartbreaking, you know, kind of like realization that this is leaving?
Yeah, well, I guess kind of keeping it like music and arts venue related. Rebar closed.
Yep.
That was like right after I went to some of their,
it's like right at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah. And right when after they reached their 30th anniversary mark too. So yeah, I mean that was another place where was super influential for me growing up.
Yeah.
And I think that was the place I saw like my first live drag with like Jackie Hell and Ursula Android, like super like gutter punk drag. And
they had live wrestling there too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, everyone has who's been at Rebar seems like they have like a transformational story. And I think part, you know, aside from the historical significance of it, like Nirvana having their record release party there
and getting kicked out. Yeah.
Or like Dina Martina getting her start there, like Bacon Ship was there, which is like the longest running drag show in Seattle, just like all these like amazing awesome things to have come out of Rebar.
Yeah.
It's also, I mean, I think this is one of these places where you have like this really vibrant, diverse cross-section of people that are in the same space, and that's where like really awesome magical things happen. You know, and then for it to get, as I understand it, you know, they closed because it was a pandemic, but it's like, I don't think you can really blame everything on the pandemic because it was like these lurking, these like underlying
causes. I mean, that area is crazy expensive now.
I mean, it's surrounded on all sides by like luxury like condos and Amazon buildings. And
I'm surprised that sandwich shop right there is still open.
Oh, yeah.
That place rocks.
The corned beef place. Yeah. Oh, I love that place. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it was probably like a matter of like a few, like tens of thousands of dollars between them being able to stay and like, and having to shutter their doors. So it's like some of these places that closed during the pandemic, it's
the
like,
High Line.
Well, maybe it was only a matter
Capitol Hill.
Yeah, the High Line. Yep. Yeah, that was another awesome venue. So yeah, people just had, I mean, I love reading the comments because sometimes, sometimes I just can't even look at them, but yeah, just the stories that people were sharing about the connections that they made and how meaningful it was. It's bittersweet. And I heard that they're, you know, still looking for a place maybe farther down south. So that's a place I would hope would unvanish eventually. And then I did a post fairly recently about the Central Tavern, Central Saloon.
Yeah.
And how the longtime owners were able to, it looked like, so I guess when the owner of the building passed away, it looked like the building was going to go up for sale, which always like endangers the venue that's in it.
Yeah.
But then they were able to, I guess, have a first crack at buying the building.
Yeah.
And they're actually able to do that.
That's killer.
So, meaning that, you know, the Central is going to be sticking around and continuing its longstanding, historical and musical significance. And so, yeah, I feel like when you give good news and I ask people to share their memories.
Yes.
I mean, that was a great one to see because everyone was like shouting out all the shows they've seen there and just how happy they were and what it meant to them. So, yeah, there's so much richness, I think, in the stories that people will share in the comments.
Awesome.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of...
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Shop up to 50% off site-wide, plus a free professional measure during the Black Friday sneak peek sale going on right now at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
Well, you know, what are you tracking right now? You know, what are you working on? Are you able to share like something that, you know, you're kind of, you know, working on is it for some research or anything?
Yeah. Well, I feel like I'm never not tracking stuff because people are always sending me things. And then I'm like, I'm afraid to check my own messages, but I definitely encourage people to reach out. I'm exploring getting into some audio as well, and I think my test case for that, not to jinx it or anything, but the Highland Ice Arena up in Shoreline, they've been around since the early 60s, and they're going to be closing and redeveloped in closing in mid-October.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a place like that, and especially one that, like, is relatively accessible and affordable and just has... so many stories connected to it.
I kind of
want to dive into and like learn about the potential for expanding into audio as a way to share Vanishing Seattle related content. And then we're also in pre-production for the second series of Vanishing Seattle films.
That's awesome.
Yeah, looking at different neighborhoods, different small businesses and community gathering spots. So yeah, there's no lack of places and stories, which is like, yeah, sometimes feels overwhelming and unfortunate, but like you said, there's, you know, a lot of positive stuff mixed in there too.
That's awesome. Well, like I said, follow this account. It might break your heart, but it'll also, you know, bring nostalgic good vibes if you're a Seattleite, if you're someone from this area. And I'm someone who grew up in Kent area, but, you know, was always coming up to Seattle, always, you know, had this, you know, vision of moving to Seattle when I graduated college. And it's awesome to be a part of this, you know, rich radio, you know, vibrant community of radio stations that have survived. It's really cool to be able to document your account. It's able to document local bands. It's important to document the rich, vibrant communities of Seattle. Applaud your efforts. It does not go unnoticed. You work very f-ing hard at this, and much. I'm excited to witness your transformation into audio as you try to mess around with that and see where it goes. I'm excited for that. As someone who grew up in this area, what are some favorite musicians from the Northwest of all time?
There's kind of the iconic ones that I feel like will always be like all-time favorites.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Nirvana, Jimmy, Bikini Kill, Sleater-Kinney. I recently learned about Bam Bam and Tina Bell. Yeah. And like, that was incredible, and their music mm-hmm. is like,
have you been to the Vera Project melting? Since there's a huge mural of Bam Bam of Tina Bell
in
there.
Right. I'll have to check that out. Yeah, thank you for telling me about that. And there's also just like always really cool like new music coming mm-hmm. out too. I mean, I feel like a lot of the stuff that I really like is kind of reflective of the time that I started going to shows and like entering like my teens and early 20s and the stuff that was like resonating with me then. And some of those bands are still around, like
Man Plus.
Yeah. They're gonna come back. Like Paris Alexa is like one local musician who's just like, yeah, super amazing. I just feel like and thanks for, you know, like your local show and like other local radio, that's always turning folks on mm-hmm. to, and you know, keeping the excitement up about local music, because it's always growing and changing, and I feel like we have just such a rich legacy here. And you know, going back to like, I mean, I'm still learning about, you know, all the cool bands and clubs that were around in like the 60s and 70s, like the soul and funk scene, like the Wheatles Groove stuff, mm-hmm. and then go back to like jazz on Jackson Street in the 40s, mm-hmm. and then there's the Roadhouses in like 20s and 30s, like Spanish Ballroom or Spanish Castle and Parker's Ballroom, and my friend Brad Holden, who is Seattle Artifacts on Instagram, just published an awesome book called Lost Roadhouses of Seattle, which I'd highly recommend. Yeah. So there's just like so much to dig into, and I'm like constantly learning about all this music and all the venues and spaces mm-hmm. that like allowed that to flourish and that continue to have an influence. So yeah, fun stuff.
There's a book called Rusted Metal, which is a 900-page book about this history of Northwest heavy metal.
No way. What?
900 pages.
It's like the Bible.
Yeah, it's crazy. So it's like, it documents every single band to a T. It is crazy. But the interesting thing is, you know, I had these guys on Loud and Local years ago and that wrote the book. And one thing that I learned, I didn't realize how much of a of like a epicenter of a Northwest metal, like Bellevue was because of, you know, there was like these skate rinks over in Bellevue and Redmond and stuff where like Queensryche started, all these like early, you know, like kind of, you know, people might call them like hair bands or something, but back in the day it was like the rock and roll scene was over on the east side. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these, you know, Skate King or whatever they were called. And it's interesting to, you know, think about, you know, this is Bellevue, you know, mm-hmm. as like this epicenter of heavy metal for, you know, it's just so funny. And then, you know, going to Washington Hall for Defy Wrestling, we went up to the tech lab where we record the podcast up in the media lab, and they just have all these really cool breakdancing posters of just like, you know, all these, you know, just the history of Northwest hip hop. It's just
And it houses 206 Zulu.
Yeah, like it's so cool.
Organization, and Jimi Hendrix played there. Like, yeah,
Fugazi
time.
Played there.
Yeah, and it got, you know, saved and preserved and rehabilitated by Historic Seattle, and continues to be a cultural space. So it's like, we don't got to tear everything down. Like, the stuff can still is, and it doesn't mean to throw a tarp over it or preserve it in amber. If you're preserving something, you're actually preserving its ability to continue to make future memories and culture and bring people together. So that's Washington Hall is like a wonderful example of that.
Yeah. What makes Seattle so different in your opinion than other, you know, cause you lived in New York City, like what makes Seattle so much different? You know, why is Seattle important to preserve? Devil's advocate.
Yeah. That was a excellent question. I mean, it's hard to put my finger on because I feel like Seattle is hard. There's something about Seattle that's like kind of ineffable, and it just defies being defined even, or like put in a box. And I think because it's been such a boom and bust city throughout its history, and it's been torn down and rebuilt multiple times.
Not just recently, historically.
Right, you know? Yes. And I feel like there, it gives it a bit more of like an importance to, because the history changes, or just the knowledge of that history and the potential of erasure, like that happens so fast, which is why I feel kind of this desire to document stuff. Because once stuff is gone, it's like, it's almost like it didn't even exist. And I think if you document something, you can't deny that it existed and that it meant something to someone.
I was here. We were here.
Yeah, we were here. I mean, that's just like this human urge to do that. Like, you know, to graffiti, you know, I was here. And, you know, this mattered. And, you know, Seattle does have this history of, like, I think we have this tension between wanting to be, like, this prosperous city on the hill, and then this history of being kind of, like, a vice, like, underbelly. Sure. Which I think is, like, super important that we don't forget that. So how can we keep renewing ourselves and, with more people and places, but doing it so in a way that doesn't lose sight of the past and where the past can like inform where we're going. So yeah, I mean, I think that, and I've heard other people who like have lived elsewhere and come to Seattle been like, wow, like I've never been at a place where it changes so quickly.
Yeah.
Just, you know, physically, but also the risk is culturally as well, like the good things about the culture just get like painted over and whitewashed. But I think people here really care. I think there is this like kind of defiant, creative, collaborative spirit. Like people really give a shit here, and they don't want to go quietly into the night or just like roll over.
Absolutely. Yeah.
People
there's
are very
a pushback.
Passionate.
See, like, people are, you know.
Yeah, so people are very passionate here. I don't know if it's like something in the water or what, but I think there is something where we do have, Seattle in the Northwest has its own unique culture that I think is worth, digging into and drawing upon and drawing people in. So, yeah, again, it's hard. I'm just, like, rambling. It's hard to put my finger on it because I think Seattle is, like,
I mean,
it's
you
so
have,
many things.
You have the elephant tattoo. You have the elephant of the pink elephant, you know, car wash tattoo on your arm. So, obviously, you're very passionate about Seattle. If you heard that grumbling in the background, that is not my stomach. It is actually cats that were fighting.
Oh.
Two cats fighting over territory in this house. We're recording in my living room. So, Cynthia, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And again, I invite folks to, you know, get in touch, Banishing Seattle on Instagram. You can slide in my DMs. You can email me, go on the website, banishingseattle.org. Again, I just, yeah, I invite people to help me with this.
Yeah.
So yeah, please, you know, get in touch.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, thank you to Cynthia Brothers from Banishing Seattle. Right now, we are going to go back in time and play one of Cynthia's old projects. This is a band she did called Naughty, and the song is called Pet Maker. Thanks again to Cynthia. Here's Naughty on Loud and Local.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky. But Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
rooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Shop up to 50% off site-wide, plus door busters and a free professional measure during the Black Friday sneak peek sale at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.